Welcome to the Leadership Journey Podcast. I'm Alan Wilson, the host of the podcast, and my guest on this episode is David Smith. David is the head of the Evangelical Alliance in Northern Ireland, and this week the Alliance has just published a new report on evangelicals in Northern Ireland. The report is called Good News People. It brings together the results of two surveys that were carried out in 2023 in Northern Ireland, one a survey of the general population and the other an online survey of professing Christians. David joins me to talk about the report, and we begin by hearing something of his own story. Enjoy the podcast. David, welcome to the Leadership Journey Podcast. It's great to have you on here.
Oh, thank you. Great to be with you.
Yeah, there's a number of your colleagues have been on. I think we've got a growing number of Evangelical Alliance people who've appeared on this. But we're going to talk a little bit about you and your own story, who you are. But we're also going to be talking about a piece of research, a very significant piece of research that has just been released this week by the Evangelical Alliance, Good News People. So we'll get to that. But a little bit about yourself. So, I mean, first of all, maybe just describe your title within the Evangelical Alliance and describe a little bit about what you do, what the Alliance is, and what kind of stuff the Alliance does, maybe particularly here in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. Great to be with you. I'm head of the Evangelical Alliance in Northern Ireland. I've been working with the organisation for 12 years now. And the first 8 years of that, I was our public policy officer. So engaging up at Stormont whenever we had an assembly there, talking with politicians about all kinds of issues of legislation and public policy. And the last 4 years, it's been my privilege to lead the team here in Northern Ireland. The Evangelical Alliance itself has been around from 1846, so coming up on 180 years, so a very old charity. We exist across the UK, and actually there's Evangelical Alliances that have sort of been birthed out of this movement now in over 100 countries around the world. We're all part of the World Evangelical Alliance. From the start, we've done three main things. Very briefly, we build relationships across the evangelical church. So whether that's Anglican or Baptist or Presbyterian or Charismatic or Diaspora churches coming together under this banner of the Evangelical Alliance and really bringing people back together around the gospel, where sometimes we have a tendency to go off and start new things, which is great. Second thing we do is we resource our members. So the research we're going to be talking about is a good example of that. We provide resources for our members on evangelism, on public policy issues. And then we also represent our members at the different parliaments across the UK and speak in the public life and the media, providing a Christian and evangelical Christian perspective into a wide range of policy and social political issues.
Okay, that's great. That's great. There's a question I want to ask, and it maybe belongs in the next part of the later part of our interview, but it's probably worth just asking it now, because this word evangelical, I think particularly in the last probably 5-6 years, and particularly because of political events in North America, it's probably taken on a sociological connotation. And in many people's mind, it's become more defined sociologically rather than defined evangelically, defined theologically. Sorry. So, tell us what you mean by this word, just so that you're not describing a worldwide alliance of white right wing leaning political supporters, are you?
No, definitely not. And I read some research recently that three quarters of evangelicals in the world are in the global south. So certainly American evangelicalism and certainly Northern Irish evangelicalism are in the minority when it comes to the global picture. Evangelical is a really helpful theological word. We trace our meaning back to the Evangelion, the good news in Greek, The title of this report is Good News People, and that's something that we want to sort of recapture. And very briefly, four kind of characteristics of evangelicalism as per David Bevington's sort of quadrilateral that will be familiar to some listeners is that we care deeply about the Bible and it's the highest authority for how we live our lives. The cross changed everything. and what Jesus did there in terms of personal salvation, but also his victory over the powers of sin and darkness. That's really crucial. Personal relationship with God and coming to a living personal faith in him. It's not just something we imbibe or move in. It's a decision that we have entered into live intentionally with an apprenticeship to Jesus. And the last thing is activism. And evangelicals are driven to share their faith and to demonstrate their faith in the way that we live our lives. But you're absolutely right. There's been so much cultural baggage with this term, and that came up in our research and is something that we are keen to kind of unpick and explore, because there's cultural flavors of evangelicalism. If you go to Africa, different parts of Africa, South America, particularly Northern Ireland, and yes, of course, in America right now.
Yeah, thank you. That's helpful. It's a very concise way of expressing those four things. So we'll come back to evangelicals and evangelicalism just in a little while. But first of all, I'd like to ask you just a few questions about your own story. So talk a bit about growing up. When did you become a Christian, and how did you grow as a Christian? Who have been some of the influencers and some of the key events along the way?
Yeah, so I'm just over 40 now, so a child of the 80s, and growing up in the 80s and 90s, I grew up in a Christian home, very, very grateful for that, and very faithful parents who are still involved in the church that I grew up in. I remember, you know, key moments praying with my mum and dad as a child, praying to come to a saving faith in Jesus, and I often sort of describe at that moment I was inviting Jesus into my heart, but actually, you know, I think what was really happening is God was inviting me into his heart. I was inviting God into my life, and that's true, but he was inviting me into his life, and he honored the simple request of that five-year-old, but he gave me so much more, and he's invited me into so much more than I understood or can still understand. Mm-hmm. I remember, you know, going up to bed as a teenager and walking past my mum and dad's room, and my dad was on his knees praying, you know, at night. And those sort of things really, really stuck with me. My mum and dad were very faithful. We were out of church very regularly on Sundays, afternoon Sunday school, helping in lots of different ways. I grew up in the Elam Church, and then spent my teenage years really in Baptist churches up to my mid-20s. And the last sort of 10 years or so, we've been worshipping as part of a local Presbyterian church. And those kind of changes came at different times and for different reasons. But looking back in the providence of God, I can certainly see how that's been very helpful in the work that I do now. To be able to walk into different expressions of church and just connect and kind of see where some of the emphasis is placed. And see the best parts and also some of the challenges in each of these denominations as well.
I
was born with a cleft lip and palate, and I suppose that's something that shaped me as well personally growing up. I had to go to a lot of speech therapy, have sort of surgery, dental surgery and different things. And I remember praying to God as a child, God, I'll do whatever you want, but please don't that involved public speaking. I just dreaded reading in front of class. I dreaded speaking publicly. And that was certainly the thing that I really did not want to do. And I definitely had an affinity with Moses, who, you know, said, I'm not someone who can speak well, send someone else. And the Lord, again, in his maybe humor or providence, has brought me into a role. I trained as a solicitor and found myself speaking in court a lot. A lot of relational conversations with clients, and now in this role, often like speaking at churches or public events. And can honestly say, you know, I think the Lord has been faithful and gracious in that, and provided strength for something that at one point I absolutely dreaded.
That's really wonderful, David. That, you know, just to see the providence of God and weaving so many bits of your story, you know, the denominational thing, as you say, preparing you for the role that you have, but also that thing of taking an area of fear in you, but, you know, leading you and equipping you to the point where you are. And yet, I guess because you can remember that prayer, so
so clearly. I'm praying that you'd never have to do what you're actually doing today.
Yeah.
I suppose that's just a constant reminder to you that, well, God's strength is made perfect in your weakness. God's strength is made perfect in our weakness, isn't it? And that's what Paul learned. And that no doubt has really equipped you for so much of what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. I really, I think it keeps, I'm not, but I think it helps with just not becoming proud. I'm realizing I still feel under equipped in some areas, and that's okay. And the Lord does use people. We all have weaknesses in different ways. And the Lord often uses those to show his glory and his strength. So yeah, that's certainly been helpful. And then dispositionally or personality wise, you know, all those different tests you do, Myers-Briggs and different things. I always come out as a sort of diplomat or a peacemaker. Nice. And personality wise, it's helpful for, I suppose, the role that I'm in as well. And I know this is a certain point in my life, and I don't know what lies ahead, but certainly at this point it's helpful to be able to see different arguments, different points of view, and maybe the legal training again is helpful in that. And personality to be trying to build relationship is just helpful within evangelicalism, where sometimes we have a tendency to part our ways rather than come together. But also around some very difficult, sensitive public policy issues, I think it just brings something. And to be able to look at the different viewpoints and not maybe be close-minded in an unhelpful way around something.
Yeah. So how did you find yourself working for the Evangelical Alliance then?
Yeah, I trained as a solicitor. That's not primarily what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a wildlife cameraman whenever I was young, or work outdoors in forestry or something. But found myself sitting at a desk doing a lot of legal work and going to court, particularly around personal injury claims. And actually, that was great training. Again, working with all kinds of people, trying to weigh up the evidence that they are giving you. Do you trust them? Do you believe? Can you prove what's being said? And the reason I went into law probably wasn't to do personal injury claims. It was because I care about where legislation came from, who gets to decide, what values do we legislate for, what do we criminalize, what happens when faith and politics and culture all collide with the law. And there was also, I suppose, that drive towards justice, that in a personal injury claim, something has happened and you're trying to find out truth, you're trying to reach for justice, and you're also trying to reconcile the parties and move on. And there's something in those things that drives me as well, I suppose. So I was working away there. I saw the job come up with Evangelical Alliance as their public policy officer. And I thought, yep, that's the space I'm really interested in, where I can bring my faith to bear on law, politics, culture. And so applied in 2011 and started my work with EA.
What sort of a journey was that then, the 8 years that you did working as public policy officer?
Yeah, it was a bit of a steep learning curve. I've always been interested in politics, but from a small P political approach. We weren't a big P political family. And as I was working as a solicitor, I was in Uri, a border town here in Northern Ireland, I got very interested in the troubles, in what had unfolded just a few miles from where I grew up in the Mays prison. And I didn't grow up in the Mays prison. I grew up just a few miles from it. And then Uri, where I worked, was a very different culture, community. And bridging these two worlds, where I was living and where I was working, were just two very different cultures and community. And so I ended up reading about 50 books on the troubles in Northern Ireland. A lot of my friends at that time in work were Catholics from a more Republican background, and just were very gracious as I was asking questions and exploring what had gone on in their lives and experience and how that was different to me. So I suppose at the heart of, again, applying for EA and things was, well, actually this question is, Christians in Northern Ireland, what do we do about what went on here and what we call the Troubles? What do we do about all these other issues, poverty, issues around sanctity of human life, issues around how we care for the environment. These sort of things were bubbling up. And so those first 8 years as public policy officer were a bit of a steep learning curve, but such a joy. I mean, I genuinely love working for the Evangelical Alliance. We're given a lot of freedom, and there's a lot of wisdom that comes with a charity that's been around for so long. So I really enjoyed learning from my colleagues, from Peter, from many others across the team, as to how we might engage well and with a long-term perspective on very hot-button, urgent issues of the day, and how we bring something otherworldly from sort of the biblical perspective to that.
I wonder then, just in the 4 years that you've been head of the organization here, are there particular highlights that you would look on just apart from the report that we're going to get to shortly, but other highlights that there've been?
Yeah, I think I am quite a relational person, so a lot of my, I suppose, what I'm looking for is building good, healthy, sustainable relationships that aren't just transactional. So I think, having worked now 12 years in the same organization, what I find, and having been there 8 years before coming into this role of leadership, I definitely find that I was able to draw upon genuine relationships that I'd built up over years. And so that's just been a highlight, being able to lift the phone to lots of different people, to collaborate on different projects, and to serve the church together. And so I started in January 2020, as we know, a few months before COVID. So those, I planned to go out to meet with lots of church leaders, lots of our members across the next year. And a lot of that had to be shelved, obviously. But the camaraderie, the relationships, the collaboration that was built up during COVID, being able to serve the church in a very practical way at that time. Again, maybe the legal background, helping to interpret guidelines, and those were a lot of the questions that we were getting, very practical concerns at that point. And building a team of amazing people, I have a real privilege to lead a team of amazing people, and that's been a real highlight. Working together around issues like abortion and reframing that, and I think you've had Dawn in the podcast before, but yeah, moving away from a tug of war around that issue to, in my view, a much more biblical approach where we try and serve both women and unborn children together. Mm-hmm. That's been a real privilege, and learning how to navigate very culturally contested issues. Just getting to see the breadth of the church, getting to go out and speak in different places, or just meet with members who are hands-on serving the poor, who are out in very difficult communities sharing the gospel. Just the breadth of what we do is probably the greatest privilege, Alan. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you, David. Just let's talk about the report then. So this week, it's been launched officially. It's been quite a while in the making. And I know that there have been a few little delays and so on along the way, but an amazing piece of work, tremendous depth of work and research has gone in, and brilliantly presented in the booklet that you made available this week. But talk to us a little bit about what was the reason for that prompted you to decide was this something we need to dig into? First of all, maybe the couple of research questions. What were we trying to find out? And then why at the moment?
Again, actually, as I came into the role in 2020, it was something that was on my mind. I thought, oh, I'd love to take a snapshot of the wider church in Northern Ireland and sort of see where we're at, and then maybe do it again in 5 years' time and just see what some of the trends are. So it had been in my mind for a while. But with the pandemic, it just was not the right time to try and assess the health or vitality of the church at that moment. So yes, a few delays and eventually getting going. But the census in 2021 found that 80% of people in Northern Ireland identified as Christian. Now, we didn't for a second think that meant that all of those people were going to church, all of those people were believers. But we were interested as to why that was so high compared to England and Wales, where it was 46% of people who identified as a Christian. And we sort of thought, well, we have to explore that further. Northern Ireland is a very particular place. It's very religious, and locality and religion still matters here whenever you go to North Antrim or South Armagh or wherever. And yet, in many ways, we're like other parts of the world, particularly with mobile phone technology, we can access services and be like New York or Sydney or other parts of the world. So we thought, yeah, this would be a really good time to see what is going on with religiosity in Northern Ireland. We wanted to know how many practicing Christians are there, how often people pray, read the Bible, go to church. We want to find out more about evangelicals in particular. And that led us to our research. So in April and May 2023, we commissioned a public poll from a professional polling company called Savanta. And they carried out a research on 1,005 people across the population in Northern Ireland. And that was professionally weighted so that it was properly representative of community background, as we say in Northern Ireland, Protestant or Catholic background, age, sex, council, locality, you know, so it wasn't all urban or rural. It's all weighted to be representative of the population in Northern Ireland. At the same time, we did our own online survey of practicing Christians, and we had over 2,000 responses to that. And so we had these two sets of data.
Sorry, can I just chip in for a second? And this, I think it's helpful to explain that general population thing, because I mean, obviously, if you took 400 people coming out of a very large church in the middle of Belfast on a Sunday, you're going to get particular kind of numbers. They're going to be very different from what you would get if you picked another 400 people. So it's good to get that background. But just can you say a little bit more about the couple of thousand Christians then who were specifically engaged in the other piece of the research? How was that chosen?
Yeah, that was a self-selecting online survey. And so the responses that we got, 99% of people responding saying, I'm a practicing Christian. 83% of people who responded self-identified themselves as evangelical. And about 5% of people who responded said they used to be evangelical, but they no longer are. Mm-hmm. So we have this data set of the general population that's representative of Northern Ireland. And then our survey is not representative of the population of Northern Ireland. And it's not representative even of the very broad church. We only had 19 responses from Catholics to our survey. So, but it is highly representative and provides a very clear, consistent picture of what we call in the report classic evangelicals, Protestant evangelicals from Presbyterian, Baptist, Anglican, Methodist, independent, charismatic churches, so from right across the range of Protestant denominations and the evangelical subset within that. We have very good data on that as well.
That's great. That's helpful, I think, for listeners to just pick up the methodology. And of course, if they get their hands on a copy of the book of the booklet, the publication of the research, they can read all this. Also available online from the EA website. We'll give some of those details in the notes and also at the end of the podcast. But let's start then with the general. The general public. What are some of the headlines then that came from the this representative poll? What came out?
Yeah, I think some of the biggest things that we, you're quite right, the report is free to download. I should have said that. It's on our website now, and people can do that. And we have loads of information in there. You can go in all kinds of directions and rabbit holes with that. But we have some takeaways at the end, and I'll try and maybe structure my response around that. That might just be helpful. But headline sort of general population findings are that one in two people here describe themselves as a practicing Christian. And we asked the question, would you consider yourself to be a practicing Christian? And 50% of people said yes. So that's really high. As we said, 80% of people identified as Christian in some way in the census. 50% of people in our poll said, I'm a practicing Christian. So that would suggest about 30% of people are maybe non-practicing Christians. They still identify as Christian in some way. Maybe they mean, well, I'm not an out-and-out atheist. Mm-hmm. I'm not Jewish or Muslim. I'm a non-practicing Christian. But 50% of people said I'm a practicing Christian. Now, that still sounds really high. Whenever we break that down a little bit, 62% of people from a Catholic background say they are practicing Christians. 46% of people from a Protestant background say they are practicing Christians. So much higher rates of people saying they're practicing Christians within the Catholic community. Mm. And of course, we have many more Catholics in Northern Ireland than in Scotland, England and Wales proportionally as part of the population. So I think that helps to explain that figure a little bit more. We then asked people, so we thought, again, that's still sort of a measure of self-identification.
Yes.
People saying, I consider myself to be a practicing Christian. And we didn't define for people what that was, but we kind of assumed that that means some sort of belief and some sort of practice combining to consider yourself to be a practicing Christian. But we also wanted then to ask, well, what about these practices? Because throughout the church, historical, universal, people have come together to worship regularly. They have prayed, they have read the Bible. So we kind of thought, well, let's take those three measures and ask the general population how many people do these things on a weekly, on a monthly basis. And we found that 35% of people in Northern Ireland say they pray every week. 23% of people say they go to church every week. And 13% of people say they read the Bible every week. And for comparison for your listeners, maybe in GB, a YouGov poll in 2022 found that 7% of people in England and Wales go to church each week there. And we're talking 23% here. So again, higher levels of church attendance, prayer, and Bible reading, which does reflect the religiosity of Northern Ireland.
Yeah, was there anything drilling into the detail of that a little bit, was there any indication of whether, for example, is church attendance, is the rate higher in rural areas? Is it higher in cities? Anything on that? The parts of
yeah,
the country,
I think we
counties?
Do. We do have some data on that, Alan, and what we've actually done is published the full data sets on our website as well. So for any statistical sort of nerds out there who would like to go on, you can download the full data table and you can scroll across and see what that looks like for different demographics. So we know that Catholics were more likely to go to church each week. Protestants were more likely to read the Bible. And again, there's maybe some stereotypes in that, but those are true. I think it was higher in rural areas. I think you're quite right on that. I encourage people to go and look at all that data.
That's helpful.
Older people were more likely to identify as practicing Christians. They were more likely to read the Bible every week than those in the 18 to 24 bracket. But interestingly, those in the 18 to 24 bracket who were practicing Christians were more likely to identify as evangelical than the older bracket.
Why do you think that is?
Yeah, what I'm surmising and some of the reporting this week as we've released this research is maybe hinting at is that, you know, this is a snapshot, this is a point in time, and we would like to do this research in 5-10 years. And I don't know, but I'm guessing the church attendance may drop. We just don't know exactly where we are in the point of time, but looking back to some other research, church attendance has been higher across this island, significantly higher in the past than even 23%. So I think, as this is my surmising at this point, is that as maybe church attendance and religiosity does fall, it has remained high in Northern Ireland for many reasons, but if it does fall in future, I think those who continue to practice their faith are doing so because it's very real and very meaningful to them.
Yeah.
And it's not a nominal faith that they are continuing just to practice. It's very personal and maybe more likely to be considered evangelical.
Right.
And they're more likely to consider themselves evangelicals potentially within the expression of faith that they practice.
Yeah. Were you surprised at the 23%?
Yeah, 23% of people going to church each week, that did surprise me. Again, I think, as we said, a good chunk of that is because of a significant number of Catholics within our population who are more likely to go to church on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. But we did still find relatively high rates of church attendance within the Protestant community as well. And combined, 23% compared to 7% in England and Wales, that's a significant difference.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I know there's another number in the report that looks at people who are involved in worship monthly, prayer weekly, and Bible reading weekly. They do all three of those things. Now that comes to quite a smaller number, doesn't it? So 9%.
That's right.
Do you want to comment on why there's such a gap between the 50% and the 9%?
Yeah, so as we said, census is, I just identify as a Christian, that's 80%. We ask practicing Christian, or you're practicing Christian, and 50% of people say yes. And then we asked about church attendance, prayer, Bible reading, and we had those stats I just shared. And then we asked, well, you know, who does all three of those things? Who goes to church at least once a month? Who reads their Bible every week and prays every week? And the reason we chose those three criteria is that's what we did in our Talking Jesus research in 2022. So that allows us to make a UK-wide comparison.
Right. So just to clarify, that is a, that's a wider piece of research that the organization did across the UK. What, last year? It's been done more than once, hasn't it?
Yeah, we did it in 2015 and we did it in 2022.
Yeah.
And it found that 6% of the UK population go to church at least once a month, pray every week, and read the Bible every week. Mm-hmm. Whenever we asked the polling company to extract the same measures for Northern Ireland, we found that 9% of people here do those three things. So it's about 50% higher than the UK average. But still, that is significantly smaller, you're quite right, than the 50% of people who say they're a practicing Christian but don't do those three things on that much of a regular basis.
Yeah, it's interesting that you've got 35% of people who participate weekly in personal prayer, and yet there's only 9% then that meet these three criteria. So there's obviously a lot of people who pray but don't necessarily read the Bible, or who pray but don't necessarily go to church. And I guess the combination of those three things, there are a lot who do one or two of those, but not who do all of them.
Yeah, and we'll come on to look at the classic evangelicals, the kind of subset of this data. They have extremely high rates of all of these things together. And for those of us sort of listening to this, most likely to be evangelicals, I would assume. Or I would guess that most are, going to church at least once a month, praying every week and reading the Bible every week. Those are things that are very important to us. They are how we practice our faith, along with many other ways that we demonstrate and live out our faith. But these are certainly core things. So for evangelicals, these are, for most, these would be a given that we would be wanting to do those things, that we would be seeking to do those things. And so I do think that's more reflective of the classic evangelical kind of figure for Northern Ireland, I would assume.
Yeah, because those, when you get to that bit, the other piece of the research, you're talking 96% of evangelicals praying once a week, 95% at worship once a week, and 92% reading the Bible at least once a week. So that the 90s for all of that. One of the things that I think it struck me in reading the material, and maybe you can help me with this, and a 21% of the population identifying as evangelicals, but yet only 9% of the population who meet those three criteria of practicing Christians. And then among evangelicals, 90s and high 90s often in those practices. I'm just wondering how all that pieces together. It strikes me as, I just wonder, is there a phenomenon of cultural evangelicals, or people who are, yeah. And I know that you've dug into the portrayal of different kinds of evangelicals, so maybe that's a good time to just talk about that.
Yeah, that's right. In the report and in the research, we found that one in two people say they're practicing Christians. And then we asked the practicing Christians, would you also consider yourself to be an evangelical? And 40% of practicing Christians said yes. And so that's one in five of the population in Northern Ireland. Now, that was much higher than we were estimating. I think part of that, and within that, a figure that really surprised us was 38% of practicing Catholics said they also considered themselves to be evangelical Christians. Now, for the past 10 years or so, the Pope has been talking about, he's written an encyclical called The New Evangelization. And so the word evangelization has certainly become much more used within the Catholic context. But this actually delayed our research a little bit because we wanted to hit pause and dive into it because we weren't expecting it. So we went to the Evangelical Catholic Initiative, which has been around for over 30 years. And we went to the Catholic Archbishop of all Ireland, and we found some testimonies from evangelical Catholics, people who are in the Catholic Church and consider themselves to be evangelical Christians. And they were sort of feeding back that there's been an explosion of people across the island doing the Alpha course in Catholic parishes. There's been a couple of books that some priests have been using around renewal. And that has called people back to personal study of the Bible. It's called people back to a personal confession of faith. And again, a lot of commonality with what we as Reformed maybe or Protestant evangelicals might understand of a personal relationship with Jesus, to care about the Bible, for it to be a high authority, the highest authority in your life. But also some parts of it that maybe are a bit more difficult or unfamiliar for us. There's still a great Catholicity of the faith and this global understanding of the role of the Catholic Church. So I am not for a moment claiming that the 38% of practicing Catholic evangelicals are all signed up Reformed evangelicals, but there's a Venn diagram of overlap here, and it's a really interesting area that we want to explore a bit more. I think you're also right, Alan, in that a bit maybe like America, and this is where I get a little nervous, but I do think there is something of an evangelical subculture in Northern Ireland that is not maybe found in other parts of the UK, certainly, where there may be people who certainly grew up in evangelical churches who maybe no longer attend themselves, but would still consider themselves to be part of that evangelical wider community, their family. It may be more fundamentalist in some places. And we have, I think, more fundamentalism in Northern Ireland as well in our politics and our faith. Mm-hmm. And so I think that 21% of people who identify as evangelical, we've called them the broad church evangelicals. I think there's a wide mix of people. And I think there's cultural evangelicalism there, and there's Catholic evangelicalism, and there's committed classic evangelicals. And so, it's a really interesting mix of people.
I think one of the fascinating bits that comes out of it is the contrast between the way the general population thinks of evangelicals as they are portrayed, as they come across in the media, as they're portrayed in the media, and the perception that they have of evangelicals when they actually knew an evangelical. Talk a little bit about that. It is a fascinating thing.
Yeah, we've sort of talked about this, how relationships, personal relationships, can override public perceptions. And so we asked the general population, what three words do you think of when you think about how the evangelicals that you see portrayed in the media? And the top three words that came back were religious, extreme, and loud. And we then asked the same population, what three words would you use to describe the evangelicals that you know in person? And the top three words there were friendly, honest, and kind. So very different words, and not all the words that came back for the evangelicals I knew personally were all positive, and not all the words, you know, in public were negative, but certainly there was quite a distinction there. And so I think, and again, if you're a Christian listening to this, you won't be unaware of the perception that evangelicals have. We've already alluded to America, or in Northern Ireland, we have a long history of fundamentalist Christianity that is loud, that is quite extreme in places. And so those perceptions, I think we weren't surprised by, we understood. We were encouraged by the fact that when people knew evangelicals personally, there was a much more positive engagement there. And so our encouragement in this report, particularly in an age of social media and digital dislocation from other people, is to build personal relationships. That is so, so important.
Yeah. I think one of the things we'll do before we finish this is look at some of the takeaways. You know, because there are a lot of numbers, obviously, and as you say, there'll be some statistical nerds who maybe want to get on and look at the whole data set. But others are going to say, well, okay, so what's the difference does it all make? Within evangelicals, I think one of the things that the report highlights is that there are ways, and particularly thinking of political and social issues, there are some ways that evangelicals are really not so different from the general population, and other ways that evangelicals tend to be quite different. Do you want to describe what those are?
Yeah, so maybe some of the most distinctive areas first, and then some of the similarities. So when we compared the, we asked the same set of questions to the evangelicals that we surveyed and to the general population. And we found some areas of real distinction. Whenever we put the statement to people that abortion should be available in any circumstance, 92% of evangelicals disagreed or strongly disagreed with that. And that's compared to just 34% of the general population. Whenever we put the statement that people should be free to express their beliefs in the workplace, 89% of evangelicals agreed or strongly agreed with that, compared to just 54% of the general population. And then we asked a question about religious freedom and same-sex marriage, and we said churches should be compelled by the government to perform same-sex marriages. Well, 96% of evangelical Christians disagreed or strongly disagreed with that, compared to just 40% of the general population. One other area of significant disagreement was around, we posed the statement, asylum seekers, refugees, and other newcomers should be supported in practical ways and made to feel welcome in our communities. So encouragingly, 81% of evangelicals agreed or strongly agreed with that versus 56% of the general population. Hmm. So some quite clear differences there, and particularly around the areas of religious freedom and same-sex marriage in the church and abortion. And those are the areas that in Northern Ireland, evangelicals are sometimes heard the loudest on. And there's maybe a whole range of reasons for that, but I think the research shows that those are certainly two areas where our beliefs and practices are going to be actually most at odds with the beliefs and practices of the general population.
Yeah, and where do you get an overlap then? Where would be some of the stuff where there's an overlap with the general public?
Yeah, so about 83% of both evangelicals and the general population agree that more effort is needed to encourage peace and reconciliation in Northern Ireland. And also about the same, about 83% of evangelicals and the general population agree that it's now time to reform the Northern Ireland Assembly to bring about more stability and accountability. Now, we asked that before Stormont was up and running, as it has been for the past month now, but it was really trying to get to the longer term reform so that there is more stability, more peace, more reconciliation. So we were definitely encouraged that evangelicals agreed with the general population or vice versa around this issue, that there was strong alignment for good governance, really, and for peace and reconciliation. So we basically, in shorthand, said, listen, as evangelicals, we're very like our neighbours in lots of different ways. And we didn't ask an endless list of questions. So there's loads of ways that we're just like our friends, our families, or neighbours in different ways. But there are some areas where we're very distinct, and that's okay. And we wanted to highlight that and give evidence to that too.
Yeah. Another thing is the question of what evangelicals actually do. And we've talked about the I suppose what you call the spiritual practices, the prayer, worship, and Bible reading. But also there's a little piece on volunteering and a more sort of a charitable engagement. You want to comment on that?
Yeah, so 55% of the evangelicals we surveyed volunteer for their church every week. And again, if you are a regular at your church, you will know that it takes a lot of people to run the youth work, the food bank, Sunday services. You know, we are the whole body of Christ. And so hopefully that's encouraging and not surprising that many people volunteer for church. But also about a third of people volunteer for community-based activities outside their church as well, at least several times a year. And we find when comparing that to the sort of rates of volunteering within the wider community, that evangelical Christians were much more likely to volunteer than those who weren't. Mm-hmm. About 60% of evangelicals give money to humanitarian or development projects as well. And we find that, you know, again, this hopefully isn't surprising, but over 90% of churches are involved in pastoral care for their members and wider community. About 85% of churches run some kind of children's or youth work, and like 77% run outreach activities like Alpha or Christianity Explored, and then about 67% of churches have some sort of ministry to address community well-being, be that homelessness or a food bank or mental health support. So churches are deeply engaged in their local communities, they care about wider society, and evangelicals are deeply committed to their own local churches too.
Yeah. So that very much illustrates that's Bevington's activism, isn't it? That's the
absolutely
his fourth piece. There are four types. You've analysed four types of evangelical. You've already alluded a little bit to this in the conversation, but maybe just spell that out briefly for us. The four types that you feel have emerged out of this.
Yeah. So I mentioned the broad church evangelicals, the 20% of people in the general population who say, yep, I consider myself to be an evangelical. So that's that is a broad group. That's Catholic, Protestant. They may well be liberal or conservative, or they may be very religious in their practices of going to church, or they may not go that often. So there's more work to be done in this kind of grouping, as we talked about, that may have some cultural evangelicalism within it. The evangelicals from our survey were very clear and consistent and very committed. They were the ones, as we said, in the 90% of going to church, reading their Bible and praying every week. And they were very distinctive in terms of their very different views around those issues like abortion or asylum seekers compared to the general population. Sorry, forgive me for that. We also had the Catholic evangelicals, and as we said, we have lots in the research to dive into that more, why lots of practicing Catholics, 38% in Northern Ireland, also consider themselves to be evangelical, and that seems to be quite a new trend. And then the final category we have are ex-evangelicals, and they are people who considered themselves to be evangelical at one stage, but no longer do.
But we still call themselves Christians?
Certainly the ones who responded to our survey, yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's quite a small group in the general population. It was 1.6% of people, but that's more than everyone else in Northern Ireland who holds to a faith other than Christian. Mm-hmm. So a small group, but still a sizable and significant amount of people. The people who responded to our survey were still going to church quite regularly. Still reading their Bible, praying, all significantly less than maybe the classic evangelicals we talked about, but much more still than the general population. We also find that they were more into demonstrating the gospel than preaching it. So 95% of classic evangelicals said, no, we need to preach and demonstrate the gospel together. Actually, it was about 79% of ex-evangelicals said that, and there was a significant chunk said, no, our focus should be on demonstrating the gospel rather than preaching it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so people can read more about that in the report. I know you've got, I think it's eight top takeaways in this, but I'll not ask you to list them. We'll let people go and look at the report, but maybe to give us a couple of them or a couple of more general things, but not so much about all the numbers, but what does all this stuff mean for the church? So church leader listening to this, what does this mean? What's challenging and what's encouraging for a church leader listening?
Well, our biggest fear, I suppose, with this is that we've just produced it and it sits on the website or on your shelf. That's, I guess, another report. What we want people to do is download it, read it, talk about it. if you're a church leader, get together with other church leaders in your area or in your denomination and explore this further. Regardless of who you are, I think there's lots of interesting information in here, and maybe even too much information. So it tells us a lot about the quantity of our faith, if you want to put it that way. It maybe doesn't tell us so much about the quality of our faith, about how deep is our relationship with the Lord. Are we growing in discipleship? What about evangelism? And there are things in here that are certainly relevant to our discipleship and evangelism. But what we want people to do is to be able to use this as a bit of a springboard into those conversations. So our takeaways, you know, the fact that one in two people in Northern Ireland describe themselves as a practicing Christian, in some ways, that's really encouraging. There's still a lot of religious understanding and literacy maybe in Northern Ireland. But actually, if only 9% of people read the Bible every week, pray every week, and go to church just once a month, or at least once a month, there's this 40% kind of gap as to practicing Christians and people who do a lot of Christian practices. And we are sort of, you know, that makes maybe sharing our faith or encouraging people to grow in their faith quite difficult. If a lot of people feel, well, I already know that. Is there a lot of nominal Christianity in Northern Ireland? So these are the kind of things that we want people to go and explore a bit more. I think it's also encouraging that actually being a Christian, identifying as a practicing Christian or going to church every week, these are not odd things in our society. They're not unusual. We have this stat in there that more people go to church every week, according to this research, than go to an Irish League football match in the whole season. And so the narrative is sometimes that no one believes that stuff anymore. No one goes to church. Well, actually, no, that's not true. And this isn't a numbers game, and we're not trying to spin things, but we are trying to encourage the church. We find that, you know, over half people don't go to church, but actually about a third of those people who don't go to church at the minute are open to coming along if they were invited to a service. So there's encouragements around how we might share our faith. Touching upon that sort of public perception of evangelicals and personal relationships as well, you know, where we land that is we really encourage people to invest in their face-to-face personal relationships, because that's how the gospel has always been spread and will continue to be demonstrated as we live our lives with real people around us, friends and neighbors and family. We're also, I suppose, encouraging people to speak up and to play their part in public life. That yes, we are distinctive in some things, but we also share a lot of common ground with our neighbors when it comes to peace and reconciliation and a desire for good governance. And so to speak up and advocate for the poor and vulnerable and for good governance in Northern Ireland is a good thing to do. So we have some questions that people can sort of take away at the end of the report. They can explore and think about what stood out to them and what they're going to do with all of this. And that's really our hope and prayer, is that people bring this to life in conversations in their local churches.
Yeah, it's great. And you've suggested church leaders getting together. I guess, you know, like maybe in a church, church leadership team could read the report together and sit down and say, okay, what does this mean for us in our locality? Or a group of leaders across several churches in an area. Will you be trying to facilitate some of those conversations going forward, David?
Yes, absolutely. So Danielle, our public policy officer, will be trying to help people advocate well based on this research. Laura, who's our church coordinator, she will be out and about with us and the wider team this year. And we're hoping to get out right across Northern Ireland and to host and facilitate local gatherings of ministers from across denominations to look at this together. So if that's something that anyone's interested in, they can certainly get in touch with us, and we would be really keen to host and facilitate conversations actually over the rest of this year around this research.
Yeah, and the website to download a copy?
Yeah, it's eauk.org. And if you go onto the website, you can or just Google Good News People, Evangelical Alliance Northern Ireland. And yes, we have a web link that's there where the report can be downloaded, where a full copy of all the data sets and all of that is right there for people to use. And yes, the full, www.eauk.it/good-news-people.
Okay, that's great. And dare we also say that if people have appreciated this research and and see the value of it, that they may want to consider becoming members of the Evangelical Alliance and help to support future work. And when you redo this in 5 years' time, that maybe some of the new members who join will be able to contribute to the funding of that.
Yeah, definitely. We are an alliance of church congregations, of individuals, and of charities. And there's thousands of people across the UK that have joined us to support the work that we're doing. We don't get government funding. We don't seek it. We try and support the resource, our membership, but also the wider church. So all this research and work wouldn't have been possible without the support of our membership, who help us to do these things and to keep serving.
Yeah. That's great. Listen, one question I'm going to ask you. This, I'm going to spring this on you. I don't know if you're anticipating this or not. I didn't give you a specific warning about it. But you don't really get off this podcast without answering the question of what you would say to your 20-year-old self if you had the opportunity to speak to him. I've put you on the spot there. But can you give us something?
That's a great question, Alan. At 20, I think I was preparing to go backpacking around the world with absolutely no desire to be a solicitor, and no probably awareness or understanding of the Evangelical Alliance. So probably no conception of what I would be doing 20 years on later. I think I would reassure that 20-year-old person that that life was going to be good, that God was going to be faithful, that I would be blessed in more ways than I could probably imagine, and to just to enjoy actually that stage of life as well, and to enjoy what God had blessed me with then, and probably to take advantage of eating everything I could before my metabolism slowed down as well.
Fantastic. David, thank you so much. Well done on the report, and thank you for talking to us about it today. God bless you.
Thank you so much, Alan. Thanks.
Thanks to David both for joining us on this episode of the podcast and for leading this rich piece of research. Thank you too for listening. You can download a copy of the report on the Evangelical Alliance website. You can find the link in the program notes. And of course, you can also subscribe to the podcast. We'll be back soon. And in the meantime, God bless you.